Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to Slam Fire Radio, episode 23 for the week of September 19th, 2013. Welcome back. I say welcome back simply for no other reason than it bothers my co-host McClatchy.
Because we didn't come back from anywhere.
We came back.
This is the start of the show. Like, this isn't like we took a break. It's like, welcome back after that commercial break, telling you all about, I don't know, something interesting.
We've had this conversation before. I've explained it to you. I've drawn you a picture. I've spoken slowly.
Yeah, but have you seen yourself draw pictures?
Yeah. Sort of. I guess. I've looked in a mirror while drawing, so I've seen myself draw a picture.
What was? That was awkward, right? A little bit.
So listen, we have a very, very special guest this week.
That's right. And I hear Jeff Atkinson's coming on in a bit.
Oh!
Yeah, I was kind of wondering who the very, very special was, but...
It's mostly Trevor with a helmet, kind of, honestly.
I meant short bus special, Jeff. You came in Matthew's bus, right?
Not this trip, no.
Oh, all right. Well, welcome to the show, Jeff.
Well, thank you very much. It's pretty cool to be here.
The listeners may remember Jeff wrote into the show, or I don't know if it was to the show or to us. Anyway, he made a visit recently to New Brunswick. He met up for Did you guys actually do some shooting when you met up?
No, we shot some coffee.
Right.
Drank coffee.
Shot the breeze.
There you go.
Talked out of your brass and had some coffee.
Precisely.
Yeah, so you got to meet up with Matthew and Owen, and during that
fantastic visit.
Well, not with Matthew and Owen, I'm sure, but anyway, during the visit, they learned that you actually have an ATC.
All-terrain cycle? No.
All-terrain cycle.
Maybe, perhaps, I guess, for our American listeners, what I meant was an authorization to carry. We'll definitely get more into that later, but... That's why you're joining us this week, so you can talk about your experiences with that. That's
very cool.
You're way cooler than we are.
Definitely. And he has a really cool beard. Now, did the moose make it back home is my only question.
Absolutely. Most of it in my belly.
Oh, ooh, better. Tasty.
And actually, it's moose season here next week.
Yes, it is.
None of us know.
I have to wait till November 1st for my moose season to start up.
Now, did you get a tag this year?
I did. I got my antlerless moose tag.
Yep. Even more.
Yeah, we hate you.
Yeah.
Well, same. That happens, yeah. I get some of that around here.
My dad's 71. He's had one tag. I'm 38. I haven't gotten one yet. I don't know if Alvin's ever gotten one. Matthew, you need to start applying.
I applied twice this year.
Are you guys on a lottery system there?
Oh, yeah, we got a lottery system, yeah.
Lottery sucks.
Yeah, you were telling us about the system you've got there, right? Where it's kind of weighted?
It's a priority system. So every year, the first year you apply, you're a priority zero. Every subsequent year you apply, your priority goes up by one.
And then eventually the math works out where after a certain number of years, you're pretty much guaranteed a tag.
Absolutely. Depending on what you're chasing and what zone, it could be anywhere from 2 years priority and you're guaranteed one, or 14 years priority, maybe for a mountain goat or speed goat or something.
Right. That's cool.
But they post the results online. The government does that. So you can see for this animal, for this season in this zone, you need a priority 6 to guarantee one. And so you just know, okay, 6 years from now, I'm guaranteed one.
Neat.
Cool.
Well, normally, Jeff, at this point, we would jump into what we did with guns this week, and you are the guest, so we would let you go first. But it's worth mentioning that, once again, I'm here, Owen's not. When Owen's here, I'm not. So what is it again? So he's not here because he hates the listeners, and...
No, that's you. You hate the listeners. Owen can't be here because he's busy taking care of his family.
Oh,
I got the impression.
That's wow. Well, it's okay. I know where I stand in this pecking order. Holy, I can't wait for the next time you're not on the show.
When have I not been on the show? That's my only question.
I'm just saying, I can't wait for it. So yeah.
No, it really though. I mean, Owen's not here. I mean, we do have to drive the bus over him at some point. So, you know,
for
if
sure.
You want to go ahead and put it in overdrive, we'll back it up over him too, maybe. Not in overdrive though, but you know.
No, we're going to leave him alone. He needs to stay in good shape for the beating. He's going to Bolivar at the 3-gun shoot.
Right.
You believe that guy was actually trying to call him out and talk trash and stuff?
That was funny. And then Owen just kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, well, you know who the bigger man is, right?
That's right.
Bolivar is just showing his insecurities all over the internet. And Owen's
it's Jeff, right? Jeff's the bigger man is where you're going with that?
No, I was leaving Jeff out of it.
I can't speak about Trevor, but I know Owen and Matt are taller than I am.
Oh, there
you
go.
Yeah, but height isn't everything. I mean, the Eiffel Tower is tall, but it certainly ain't much of a building.
That's true. So, all right then, why don't we jump into it and get this thing back on the rails?
Jeff, let's roll.
Jeff, tell us what you did this week in guns, buddy.
Do you mind if I go back a couple of weeks with this one? Because it's pretty
cool for sure. Absolutely.
It's cool to me because.
Wait, are the guns involved?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Then it's cool to all of us, brother.
Awesome. When I met my wife, when we were way back, she got in target shooting. Okay, fast forward a whole bunch of years. Had some kids to get old enough to start shooting. My older son got him a little Cooey Model 39 single shot a couple of years ago. He started target shooting down at the ranch kind of thing. Right on. So that's three of us. A couple of weeks ago, it's time for the younger son, he's 11, to come out and try target shooting. But he was kind of hesitant. And so we're doing some errands on Saturday morning before heading out to the range. And I said, I asked him, well, why are you hesitant? You said you wanted to try it. What's holding you up here? He says, I don't know. I said, well, are you worried about the sound, the noise? He says, yeah, a little bit. So we talked about, you know, earmuffs and 22s not being very loud. But down at the range, there'll be other guns going off. But you got your earmuffs on, so that'll be fine. Oh, okay, he says. And then, so are you worried about the recoil? Yeah, a little bit. I said, okay. You and your big brother wrestle and fight and give each other more recoil than this 22 will do to you. Okay? He says, oh, okay, cool. So I said, yeah, we'll go to the range. So Saturday afternoon, a couple weeks ago, all four of us are down there. We get there about 2:00, they close at 4:00, and put up some clays. You know, we got there's a shotgun, a narrow shotgun section where you can sight in slugs or do whatever. It's kind of available to do whatever you want. No one else was there, so we set up. We had clays, we had balloons, had some zombie target, just some paper, and we set up down there. And he just took right to it. He was busting balloons. He was busting clays. 4:00 was rolling around. He said, Brett, it's 4:00. We got to pack up and go. He says, no, I want to keep shooting. So success. All four
Very
of us
good.
Now.
That's awesome.
Into the target shooting.
Sweet.
That's amazing. That's pretty awesome. I would have to say that's the longest that anyone's ever spoken without being interrupted by Matthew.
It was an interesting story, that's why.
See.
No, that's cool. That, gentlemen.
That's cool. I love hearing about, you know, how somebody gets over their fears and then gets into it. Now your ammo bill just went, you know, through the roof.
At least doubled, yeah.
Well, fortunately, it's still just 22.
That's all
right. That's right.
Yeah. Cheap enough.
Awesome.
Very cool.
The week after that, my older son, he had some golf lessons, and normally while he's at golf lessons, my younger son and I will go over to the archery range. They're both into bare bow, recurve. We'll go over to the archery range.
I said, I'm sorry to hear that.
I thought you were an archery guy, Trevor.
Yeah, but bare bow archery is like rimfire. It's, yeah.
Well, that's where they're starting.
No, it's a great place to start.
not quite a year yet. And, cool. and they're enjoying it, so that's fine.
No, no, it's a great place to learn the fundamentals.
Absolutely. So normally we'd go over and for a half an hour, he'd chuck some pointy sticks downrange. Well, this time he wanted to go to the gun range. Fortunately enough, all three activities are right near each other. So yeah, let's go to the gun range. And busted more clays, and he had the mechanics down. His trigger finger, never near the trigger until he was ready to shoot. I didn't even have to coach him on that. He seemed natural to it. And so it was a really good time.
Very good.
So happy about that. So what have I done with guns this week? Well, I had a couple of field days. I'm a forester here in Alberta, and I had a couple bush days doing the work, doing some cut block layout. And so I took my Smith & Wesson Model 586 for a couple different walks.
I knew that would get Trevor going.
Because I
quite enjoyed that.
I would totally carry a 357 Magnum.
I knew Trevor sure. would know the caliber. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I had one. I had a 586.
Oh, okay, that sounds familiar.
Mine was all PPC'd though. It looked like something RoboCop would carry.
Oh, okay.
But no, great gun.
When I have it cocked and it's just pulling the trigger, and it's so, like, I just put my finger on it and just think about it. Boom.
Yeah.
It's such a fantastic trigger.
That's how since mine was PPC, it had a fantastic trigger job done on it. Cause are you familiar with PPC, Jeff?
Only vaguely.
Right. So it's basically standing still and bullseye shooting is what it, you know, basically, right? So,
okay. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, same idea. And, the trigger on my 686 was fantastic too, but this one was even better. What barrel length, Jeff?
6-inch.
Nice.
Yeah. I've been eyeballing the 686 and a 4.2. Been kind of thinking about that, but I just really like this one. So I think I'm going to stick with it.
The 4.2 is nice. I heard on Facebook the other day that they stopped making them. They just made a limited run for Canada just to shut us up a little bit, and they're back to 4-inch again. So finding a new 4.2 is going to be hard soon. When the stock in stores that's currently there dries up, well, then we're going to be swapping back and forth secondhand stuff.
That's too bad.
My 586 was used as well, but geez, barely, and it's fantastic.
Cool.
So I had that. I even had that out today for a walk, actually. And thankfully enough, didn't need it.
Yeah.
That's the best way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's like a first aid kit. It's better to have it, not need it, than need it, not have it.
Oh, I completely agree.
Awesome. So anything else this week?
No, that's pretty much all I've done this week and lately with guns. Some target shooting and taking a couple handguns for walks.
Awesome. Cool. How about you there, McLicky?
Not a whole lot. Bolivar will be happy to hear that my second spark has now bit the dust. It's on its way back now, so that's two down. We'll see what number three does. I'm kind of tempted when number three gets here to just sell it brand new in box. That way, if you know, the problem somebody else's if there's another problem with it, but I really do like it. I mean, when it works great, but you know, when it doesn't, it sucks.
I got a great Tasco red dot here that I
mean it probably works better.
Yeah, it's my second one, and I sold the other one with a gun, and it's never given me any issue whatsoever.
Well, the thing with this is, like, even under the recoil, because I've got the 22 conversion kit all running now, even under the recoil of the 22 in the AR, the dot will turn off and then turn back on between shots. It's like, it's dumb. How hard is it to build a red dot where it doesn't turn off under 22 recoil? Seriously.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I mean, maybe I just got, you know, two bad lemons. I mean, I have heard lots of other people with sparks have no problems. Owen's got one. Owen loves his. He's had no problems with it. So, you know, maybe I'm just the bad luck Chuck for this run. So maybe the third one will be just fine. I don't know. But so far, I'm not thrilled with their reliability. I'm really glad I've got backup sites on the AR is all I got to say right now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's too bad.
So, yeah. Well, it is what it is.
Hopefully third time's a charm.
Hopefully. Yeah, we'll see. I did a little bit more work on the AR. I was talking last week how I took the Dremel to it. So I took some more Dremeling to it and kind of cleaned it up a little bit more inside with the bolt catch. And actually, I think I've got it working properly now. So we'll just have to kind of... I got to get it to the range. I haven't been to the range now in a little while. So I got to get it back out to the range maybe tomorrow. But put some more rounds through it. See if everything's working well on it. And after that... it'll be a great little AR so long as I can figure out how to turn up the accuracy somehow.
you're not gonna hand load for this thing. Let's face it, it's not supposed to be a precision gun, but maybe it likes a heavier bullet. But who knows?
I don't know. I mean, for what I'm gonna be using it for, primarily three gun, it's gonna be fine. I mean, I when I'm running and gunning, I'm not taking precise shots anyway. I'm shooting fairly big targets at fairly close range with it, so not a big deal. I'll be all right for the three gun, but for, you know, I would kind of like it to be a bit more precise. I mean, it is an AR for, you know, for crying out loud, they should be pretty good guns. So I don't know, we'll see. I'll keep messing around with it, and maybe it's just a new barrel it needs. I don't know, but
that's been my thought all along, is that maybe the barrel was put for sale for a reason, right?
That's a good point. Yeah, the guy did say it was not fired. It had never been shot. And when it got here, it was clean. Like, it did not look like it had ever been used. So, you know, I don't know. It's a 10.5 inch. Maybe that has something to do with it. A lot of guys say no. A lot of guys say yes. It's kind of, you know, flip a coin and get somebody else's opinion. But whatever. Well, I'm still happy with it. I still enjoy shooting it. I have a lot of fun with the 22 kit in it for sure. And shooting 2-3 out of it's awesome as well. So, but anyway, that's pretty much all I did. Just a little bit of tooling around. So,
how's it running with the 22 kit?
Oh, fantastic! Virtually zero malfunctions. Every now and see, the mags will hold 27, and if I put 27 in, every now and then the first or second shot will misfeed. If I load it to 25, then it's no problem.
Yeah, that's not even that's. Okay, well, the one I got from Filthy, we'll have to try it in your gun sometime, because I'm on my third AR now, and it's not working.
Okay, well, I can look. I mean, I haven't even seen it yet. I mean, that's how long it's been since I've been to your place, I think.
You've been here and gone a couple of times. We just never thought to take it out and look at it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, next time I'm there, let's see if we can actually get it out and have a peek and see if we can figure out how to make it work a little better. I mean, it was Imperial issue, right? So.
Yeah. This is it, right? I mean, if it had been from, you know,
the Rebels, it probably would have worked. But exactly. those Imperials, you know.
Yeah.
So anybody who's not friends with Filthy on Facebook, I'm sorry you didn't get those jokes, but they are funny if you know him. That's all I've got to say about that.
On Facebook.
Yeah. So, Trevor, I guess you did something this week, like, you know, kind of, you know, dip your toe in the water of the gun culture a little bit. So I don't know, maybe you want to tell us what you did.
It's nothing big. You know?
No, I didn't think so. I mean, it's like, whatever.
Yeah, just, you know, winning championships, stuff like that, you know.
You went to a woman's championship? Is that what you said?
Yes, I went to a women's championship.
That's what it sounded like.
That sounds remarkably like winning championships.
Oh, winning. But, oh, yes, you won something. Some sort of thing with the gun shooting.
The shoe sting,
right.
Yeah, so this past weekend, I mentioned on our last episode that I was getting ready to go to the IPSC Provincial Championships. So, first time running my new STI 2011 in a match, and I won.
First place. Good job. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
That's pretty darn awesome.
Yeah, it was very awesome. Stiff competition. Jody Waring, who's our section coordinator here, basically the president of IPSC New Brunswick, he's 30 years old. He'd been shooting IPSC since he was 13, and to my delight, he decided he was going to shoot standard for this match. Yeah, it was too late. By the time I found out, I was already in a good place, but so it didn't affect me. But I mean, I had the usual guys. I had last year's champion plus Harold. Harold is always tough to beat, and I don't always beat Harold. Luckily, it's been happening more often. But anyway, I beat Jody by less than 9 points.
Yeah, that was tight. That was very tight.
He was 99.38% of me.
Wow.
Yeah, jeez. You don't want. Yeah, like seriously, guys, less than 9 points between us. In the production between first and second, there were less than 20 points, and they were going on about how close that was. So let me talk a little bit about the provincials. There were 16 stages, around 300 rounds. We had 55 shooters come out. The open division was taken by George McCullough, the standard division by yours truly, and the production division by Mo, a.k.a. I'm Mo, you're not, that guy.
That guy.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Mo, I mean, that's no surprise. I'm rooting for Matt. I want Matt to beat Mo sometime soon, because, he's always just in Mo's shadow. I know he can do it. Come on, Matt, you can get him.
He can. They traded stage for stage. It was like one, he'd win a stage, the other guy would win a stage, he'd finish third, the other guy finished third. Mo would toss one up and have one down that fourth or fifth, and then Matt would do the same. So it was neck and neck. Not as neck and neck as Jody and I, but you don't want to be as neck and neck as Jody and I was.
No, it was still pretty neck and neck.
It was. It really, really was. I mean, they were standing there looking at their results when they were posted with their score sheets in hand and checking for mistakes or whatnot, and they still were 100% sure who had it after they double checked everything. All they knew was it was going to be close.
Yep.
So the stages at this match were awesome. I can say, the IPSC provincials in Nova Scotia were good, but this is the best match I've been to outside of our club.
Good.
Yeah, the Hampton Club outdid themselves. They put a lot of time and effort into this match. Everything, the logistics were great. They said there were some hiccups on the first day, whatever. Nothing that the shooters knew about. There was one stage, unfortunately, got tossed. They had it was plagued with range equipment malfunctions.
Mm-hmm.
The mounts that were holding up steel plates, the little pegs that were welded, usually get one peg in the front and two pegs in the back. Well, they kept breaking. Yeah, they kept breaking, and they got tired of fixing them and just pulled the stage. And that's good, because I couldn't hit those plates.
So that worked out for you quite well then.
Sometimes you get lucky.
I did, because I turned a 10-second stage to a 25-second stage.
Ouch. I hate it when that happens.
Yep. I shook it off, and I just kept stayed to my game plan, said, all right, just stay smooth, stay relaxed, and watch your front side on the next stage and get right back into the groove, and I did, so it was awesome. Like, first stage of the day, I knew I was having a good match. Everybody in my squad on the first stage was 10 seconds slower than I was.
Oh, well, jeez. Yeah.
Significant.
So I was like, I'm rolling. And then I find out that Mo was 10 seconds faster on it than I was.
It's hard to beat Mo. He is fast.
Yeah. So, but anyway, it was, like I said, and it was a level 2, not a level 3, which meant that they had more flexibility in the amount of long courses versus medium versus short.
Yep.
They had 5 32-round courses in this match.
That's a lot.
That's a lot, yeah. That's it. It was a real good match. They had everything on site that you could hope for. They actually took one of the covered firing points and turned it into a cookhouse. There was breakfast on the range every day, lunch on the range every day, and a full work crew in there. It was pretty awesome. Cheap prices. The banquet was awesome. Wasn't a roasted pig, but it was still really, really good. So, like I said, one of the best matches that I've been to. So, hopefully I can do it again next year. I was some pumped when I won.
Oh, yeah, man, I bet.
I was on pins and needles, and Jody went through everything first. Normally, it's you start off with production, then standard, then open, or open, standard, then production. No, for some reason, Standard got pushed to the end for the awards.
You were back there hopping up and down on one foot.
You're right. And they come up with new awards this year we didn't have in the past. And then after he announced the first five in production, he decided to list everybody in production. Like, he just kept taking it on. It was painful. So, anyway, I'm glad that I went down. We had a good time. We all stayed in the hotel as well. Like, Sal and Jason were across the room from me. Jason actually literally put me in a pretzel. I started a food fight with him at the banquet, which essentially wrote a check that my old butt couldn't cash. And I'm on the phone with Christina, and the door opens, and I look across the hall, and Sal's door is open, and there's Muffin poised in sweatpants, no shirt on, and a look in his eye like I've never seen. And then he pounces. And Sal said the last thing he saw was my eyes the size of saucers. And Christina said the last thing she heard me say was, "This is going to hurt." I reached for my knife. I got it out, but I didn't get it open. He took it out of my hand. And it was on like Donkey Kong. He beat the snot out of me. I tried. But, you know, he was a former high school wrestling champ. And he's like 30 pounds heavier than me and 3 inches taller than me, and it was embarrassing.
Well, you know, when the guy's there with no shirt on, that stuff just got serious.
Yeah, that's right. I look across the hall, and he's just wearing gym pants, and he's like a sprinter in the blocks, ready to go. And what does Mark do? Mark, my roommate, picked up my cell phone so it didn't get stepped on, and then just continued to talk to his wife out in the hallway while we beat up the room.
I thought he was going to turn on the video camera.
Apparently there is video of it, but I don't know where it is or who has it. I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
That'll be good, too.
Yeah, I'm sure they're planning to use that against me later on.
I certainly hope so.
So, Trevor, you were alternate on the New Brunswick national team, right? Does this bump you up after winning this?
Yes, I'll have a spot. Now, well, that depends, Jeff. The criteria for this year's team was supposed to be classifiers, and the classifiers didn't happen. So they picked the teams based on previous provincial standings. So who knows? Like, I mean, the guy who picked the team knew it wasn't exactly right, because the guy who had the spot that I should have had has never beaten me. He got the spot because he won the provincials the year I got DQ'd. If I wouldn't have got DQ'd, I would have won that year, because Harold wasn't there, Sales wasn't there, and he's never beat me, but it is what it is. I got DQ'd, and he didn't, so he deserved the win. And so he got a spot on the team, and I was alternate spot, so that means my scores didn't get put in. So then here, fast forward, I was alternate on national team and then go to provincials, and I beat them all last year. And yeah, so. And poor Harold. Harold has had a really – He still managed to finish third, Matthew, but he had a real challenging match. His mags wouldn't stay in his gun. He got a Zev Gen 4 extended magazine catch.
Well, I mean, he runs a 1911, right? I mean, they're not like they're a very... Oh, wait. Oh, no. No, he runs a Glock.
Yeah.
Huh.
But it's not factory. Factory parts weren't the problem.
No, of course.
He put in a tuned part, and apparently it wasn't tuned enough, and he went a little silly with the Dremel. And didn't test the gun after he worked on it, and the mags wouldn't stand. So in the end, he got permission to take his Gen 3 Glock out of the box and finish the match with that. So,
but yeah, well, that's always unfortunate. I mean, if you're going to mess with your gun, at least test it before you go to a match.
Yeah, the provincial, say, for but sure, yeah. So,
yeah. Yep. I don't know. I mean, he's a busy guy. I understand. He probably just didn't have time or whatever.
Yep. But. Well, speaking of testing.
Yeah.
I got out on Tuesday night and figured out what was wrong with the smaller grip that I got for my 2011. The set screw in the trigger that controls the over travel needed to be readjusted, because the space between the trigger shoe and the mag catch in my 2011 decreased. So the screw was screwed in too far. And that's why when I pulled the trigger, the hammer would fall. I reassembled the gun without the mag catch in and squeezed the trigger, and the hammer fell. So, okay. Figured out that I needed to adjust that screw, and I did. So then I got to tweaking with it and thought, oh, I can really, you know, I didn't play with this before. I'm going to play with it and see if I can make the trigger even, you know, even have a shorter reset or even more sensitive or whatever. And, yeah, so I get to the range, and the gun's going full auto. So we just backed that screw out a little bit more until it stopped going full auto and life was good again. It was just three round bursts.
Just three, yeah.
So a little bit too much tweak in there, a little too much for latte in the 2011.
Yep.
And then I did some shotgun work. I'm still toying with, they're still trying to figure out what do I like, the 590 or the 870. I put the 870 stock, or I put the Magpul stock on the 870. I brought it out, but I didn't get the length of pull exactly right. It comes with four plastic spacers that go on the back of the stock.
Yep.
And so I had to add one more. I was still short stroking it, and that was the problem I had with my 870 when I had the Blackhawk Nox recoil reduction stock on there.
Mm-hmm.
I was short stroking it. I was told that it's probably the stock is absorbing the energy. Same time I'm cycling the pump, and if it wouldn't be absorbing the recoil, I would make it all the way back, but I'm not making it all the way back, right? Because the gun is getting shorter. So anyway, that was the theory, that maybe the recoil reduction system was causing the short stroking. So went to the Magpul stock. I still short stroked it a couple of times. And as a result, you know, running against the timer, I was getting zero malfunction with the 590, so I was faster with the 590.
Right, but once you fix it up, you might be a little fast with the 870.
Yep.
But then again, I mean, yeah, it's just going to come down to, you know, practice and, you know, whatever one's more comfortable, that's what you go with. So
that Magpul stock, Matthew, is very, very comfortable.
Yeah.
The 870 seems to have a shorter action. No, sorry, the 590 seems to have a shorter action than the 870.
Mm-hmm.
But the length of pull on the 590 is probably correct, but it feels too long.
Right.
And the stock just isn't as comfortable on my hand as the Magpul stock. But you can get the Magpul stock for the 590. So
that could be an option then.
Definitely. Keep the 590. I'll put the Magpul stock on it too. So anyway, I'll get back out there. And after there's a match on Saturday that I'm going to in the Miramichi. And after that, it's just going to be shotguns and rifles until the 3-gun.
Right.
So.
Probably a good idea if you want a chance at beating me, so.
Well, I believe I said last week you weren't allowed to go to the match. Remember, you said, three gun, can I go? And I said no.
Right, I don't remember that.
It's on episode 21 and 22. Go back and listen to it.
No, I'm not going to subject myself to that. I'm on the show. I'm not going to listen to it, too.
Well, just proof positive that you were uninvited to the 3-gun, that's all.
Right, okay. Well, I'll see you there and still kick your butt, so it'll be all good.
I don't think you did kick my butt last year. Yeah, you did.
Everybody. Yeah, I did. I came in second, just behind Mo. So. Yeah,
and I was like fourth or fifth or something. Even Bolivar beat me. My God. Not this year. I'll be ready. I won't have the malfunctions with the ammo that I had last year.
You want to go there, do you?
Yeah, it only hurt you once. It hurt me all day.
Yeah.
So here, Matthew, take these bullets. Oh, fail.
Oops.
So, but at least you're running your own gun this year. You won't have to borrow mine. So,
my own gun, my own ammo. Yeah, I'll be good to go.
All set. Cool. So I took the Stag out and tested the 22 kit again. Same problem, failure to fire. You pull the trigger three times, you get three shots, then click. The most I think I've ever got is five shots in a row without a failure. And when I pull the round out and look, there's not a mark on the rim, so I don't know what's happening.
All right, I think I know. Yeah, I'll have a look at it. I think I can fix that.
Awesome. And then one final thing. Cigar Buff is a YouTube channel that we plug quite a bit, and he actually came to meet me a couple of weeks ago, and I was stuck in Toronto. Came to see me and a couple other buddies at a pub, and his name is Rob. I still owe him a shirt. I swear to God I'll get it in the mail next week. Anyway, he had another sub-contest on his YouTube channel. Cigar Buff is the name of the channel, and I won a Kershaw Drifter.
That's cool.
Yeah, so far I've won a flashlight off of Faded Destiny's channel, and now a knife off of his channel.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so check him out, Cigar Buff. Make sure you sub his channel, and he does some pretty nifty gun reviews and shooting videos, stuff like that. He did a decent review of the PressCheck Ventures mag, too, if I recall.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so.
Yep, remember that. Cool.
Yeah, all right. Why don't you, I'm Lee Tolis, but you go ahead and you take us into the topic here, because you're more familiar with Jeff than I am, so go ahead and take her away.
Sure. Well, we're going to talk to Jeff here now about, basically, Jeff, about how you have an ATC. I guess, first of all, Let's just really quickly, and I know, I mean, you and I and Owen spent like 3 hours at Tim Hortons talking about this. We don't have 3 hours, so let's try to abbreviate the stuff that can be. But quickly, I guess, a little bit of background, who you are, what you do for a living, so, you know, why you have an ATC, and then really quickly kind of the steps that you took to kind of get your ATC.
Sure. We'll see what we can do with that. So, mentioned earlier, I'm a forester, so I'm a forestry guy, and you know, got some office work, and I got a field work too. So I get to go, I work for the government of Alberta, and I get to work in my district is 52% the size of your province. So it's a fairly big piece of land.
Pretty big. Yeah, pretty big.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
The oil sands alone, I think, cover the space of New Brunswick.
Well, that could be too. Yeah. I don't know. I think, 10 or 11 New Brunswicks fit inside of Alberta, something like that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we're not that big.
I'm not a scientist, anyway. So.
I didn't do the math. When I work in the forest, I usually work alone, and I usually work in remote areas. And because I don't run as fast as I used to, I'll often consider remote if I'm further than from my truck, then I think the cougar could get to me. So let's call it 10 meters. If I'm working further than 10 meters from my truck, I'm considering remote, and I'm going to carry my sidearm. So that's kind of how I, what I do, where I do it, and why I get to carry one. So yeah, like Trevor mentioned, the episode after I was chatting with you guys, it is the Wilderness Carry ATC. And so what, you want me to get into a little bit of the process here?
Yeah, just how did you, you apply bet. For it?
Well, I mean, nothing in Canada happens with firearms without hoops, right?
Right.
And to carry a restricted, there's going to be a couple more hoops. So obviously, I have my RPAL. That's a good start. And then I bought handguns. My first handgun that I actually bought isn't the one I carry. It was a Ruger. What the heck is it? Stainless P85. Does that sound right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of a double action, single action, semi-auto, and 9mm.
Exactly.
That what that is?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Since traded that away, but anyway. So bought handguns, decided, yep, I'd like to pursue this wilderness carry authorization to carry. So go to the Canadian Firearms Center site, and it's form 680. And so, that looks pretty easy. It's 2 pages. You fill in some stuff. Hey, this doesn't look very hard at all. But then you start talking to the Canadian Firearms Center, and they want you to fill out an authorization to carry questionnaire. This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pages. It's stuff like, where for protection for protection of life from predatory animals in remote wilderness, describe the geographical location. Well, working for government of Alberta, I could foreseeably be working anywhere in the forested area of Alberta. So I put Alberta forested areas. It asks stuff like, which firearms, calibers, models and stuff would you intend to carry to protect yourself. So, of course, I put my Smith & Wesson Model 586, of course, the 357 Mag. Side note, I shot a buddy's 44 Magnum, and I'm just not as comfortable with that as I am with my 357. So I stuck with the 357.
I don't think 44 is, yes, definitely more powerful, but I still think a 357 is going to stop whatever you need to stop, so long as, if you can't shoot it comfortably, your shot placement is going to be off with the 44 anyway. You might as well shoot the 357, take a small hit in power, but I think you're still going to stop a bear.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I was thinking with that myself, yeah.
And 5-inch barrel or 6-inch barrel?
6-inch barrel on that one.
Yeah, so you're getting lots of speed.
Yeah, should be good.
Yeah, Yeah, it comes out of there pretty in quite commanding fashion. So I also put on my list at my CZ Model 75.
That's a 9mm.
Yeah.
And now, yeah, let's talk about that real quick. You've got a 9mm on your ATC, and not only do you have one on there, they approved it.
Well, it took a phone call discussion to get that one approved.
Right.
The CFO at the time for my first application where I put the 9mm on gave me a call. And so I called him back and I said, we had a discussion about the 9mm. He says, isn't that a bit light for wilderness protection? I said, well, I've got my 357 Magnum on there. That's essentially my summer, we'll call it bear season carry. My CZ, I have that on there. That would just be like a winter wolf and cougar style carry season. It says, well, if you run it like that, shouldn't be a problem. Bing, it's on, approved.
There you go, pretty cool.
It's really cool, yeah. So they ask stuff like, when working in the field, how many people usually work in the immediate area with you? And for me, usually no one.
Right. So all kinds of fun questions, and that took you hours to figure out, right?
Please explain why you cannot carry a rifle or shotgun. So, okay. So I say, well, the amount of equipment required to do my work does not allow me to carry a long arm. You know, I routinely navigate steep terrain, require hands free for balance and grip. You know, and it goes on and on. There's lots here.
Okay, well, let's talk real quick then. Now, you said you work for the government of Alberta. You're a forester. Yeah. Did that play a role in you being approved? Like, I guess two questions here. One, did you apply for this as a government employee or just as an individual? And then two, do you think that being a government employee played a role in you being authorized?
So I applied for it as an individual. It's not like, but part of the application package that I need to provide is a letter from my employer stating that that I do indeed work in remote areas and work alone. And, is authorized or allowed, or it's fine to carry firearms for personal protection.
Okay, cool.
So that came from my employer. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So do you think the fact that you were a government employee, do you think that swayed their decision, or do you know people who are not government employees who also have their ATCs and got it with little trouble, same as you?
Yeah. I don't know them personally, but I've heard of other people that have their ATCs, same deal, no problem.
Okay.
Get a letter from their employer, and away they go.
Very cool.
Part of the package as well, just one more thing here, Matthew, was the there's a proficiency requirement.
Oh, okay.
So I had to go and get together with a firearms instructor. We go down to the range, and he tests me with both firearms that I had on my permit. You know, we do to ensure that I can shoot it accurately and handle it safely. So that's part of the package as well, is this proficiency.
And so what kind of shooting is that? What are the distances of the targets? And are you timed? Is it under stress? Kind of walk us through that procedure.
It's not timed or under stress. There was a portion where he said, as quickly as you feel comfortable, you know, shoot. You know, I get with my CZ, it would be 10 rounds. With my revolver, would be 6. We shot at different distances. So we did some low light shooting. Let's see if I have the distances here. The inside range we went to, I think it's 20 meters at the back, and we moved it all the way up to probably 5 feet away. Did a variety of stuff with that. I did strong arm, strong hand, weak hand, support, no support.
Okay, yeah. So they actually did test you kind of thoroughly then. Cool.
I think shooting while kneeling.
Now, when they did low light, did you actually have a flashlight, or was it just dark?
No, it turned off half of the lights, kind of thing. It was just darker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so can't see a sight picture quite as clearly, of course, with the sights and
right.
I wonder. Focus. I wonder if this is a standardized test that they give everyone that gets these, or if this is just something that he was making up. What was your impression?
He does this test for quite a few people who apply for the ATC. He knows what requirements the CFO, at least here in Alberta, is looking for the test. And so it's the same battery that everybody would go through.
Cool.
Yeah, so distance, standardized, like then, said, yeah. Between 3 meters, 10, 15, and 20 meters, holstering, unholstering, that kind of stuff.
What kind of holsters do you run?
I've just got a Uncle Mike's Sidekick for my revolver.
Okay, yeah. Just with the simple snap?
Yeah, just with the strap and snap, because it's supposed to be secured.
And the authorization to carry does stipulate that you must carry open, is that not correct?
It says it does not authorize to carry concealed.
Okay.
Which essentially means, I have to carry open.
So, what do you think, and now again, this is not legal advice, obviously, but what do you think about a raincoat if it's raining? If you're out, you've got your sidearm on, and then it starts to rain, and then you put on your rain jacket. Would you stick your gun out through the pocket or something so it was still open, or would you keep it covered because, well, it's raining out, and you don't want your gun to get wet?
See, this is where the joke comes out. It says, well, he works for the government. He just puts on his ministry raincoat, which is my truck.
But no. Nice.
Yeah. Frankly, I put my raincoat on and keep going. I don't give it another thought.
Right. Okay. If you were to be approached by a ranger or something, you'd probably just tell him right away, "Yeah, I've got my gun on." Or do you think that would be something you would do? Like, how would you go about that?
Jeez, the chances of actually anybody ever seeing me in the forest when I'm carrying, because if I'm at my truck, it's all put away.
That's right. Yep.
I'm actually carrying in the forest. The chances of somebody running into somebody is virtually nil.
Oh, okay. So that's just basically a non-event then. It just wouldn't happen. Yeah, no. Non-issue.
No. Okay. And if I'm back in my truck loading, unloading, he might say, "Hey, that's a handgun. What are you doing with that out here?" So then, I've got my authorization to carry. Here it is. Da-da-da.
So I guess you've never then been asked by anybody to show your paperwork for that?
Never, ever.
No. Okay.
Nope.
Cool. Just, now, sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say, it's pretty much like how many times have we been asked to show our ATTs.
That's right, yeah.
I've never been asked for mine of those either.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of silly that, you know, ATC for wilderness carry isn't just included for anybody who has an RPAL. I mean, it's not like we're any more dangerous than anybody else. I mean, we're the law-abiding, but that's another topic all in itself, I guess. So I guess the next interesting question then, Jeff, have you ever had to use your gun?
No, thankfully. Not I haven't. Yet.
Have you had any close calls? Anywhere you've thought, ooh, maybe I'll undo this snap and get ready?
I've had, just last week, actually, when I was carrying, hanging flag in, doing my layout, there was some movement ahead of me, and I noticed there were 5 grouse.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm like, ooh, I've got a gun.
They were threatening me. There was a pack of them. I had to take them out and then eat them because they're tasty.
They were coming straight at me. No. So the thought went through my head, oh, it would be so easy. But no, that's not why I carry it. That's not what I'm authorized for. It's right. Stay put.
So you've never...
to throw it to grouse.
Right.
But they flew off.
So you've never actually come across any animals then where you thought that, oh, there's a bear.
I've come across some dead animal carcass where it heightened my awareness, and I was looking and listening and smelling a lot more than maybe I had been 5 minutes previous. And I made sure I was, that my revolver was accessible and ready. But no, I've never had a occasion where I unsnapped it or I needed to draw it. But cool. I do, that's it, that I've never had. I've had my permit for, I think it's about 5 years now, through different renewals. The first time you get it, it's 1 year, and then you can get it 2 years.
Right.
Renewals. In the number of years I've carried it, even though I've never had need to dry, I still feel comforted with it on my hip.
Right.
I like having it there, even though I've never had to use it. And this came up, I think, in last week's CCW episode, right? Is yeah. It's just because you've never drawn it. Your guest, I forget his name, but you know, it's just because he's never drawn it before doesn't mean tomorrow he won't need to.
Right. That was Ken last week, Ken Kowalski.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So very cool. All right. Well, so I guess give us a brief synopsis then. ATC Wilderness Carry. Yes or no?
Yes.
Wasn't a trick question. So you recommend this for anybody who has the ability then, huh?
And I've been coaching coworkers at work. If they have any interest whatsoever and they have handguns or are interested in getting into them, I say when you have your handgun and you're ready to go through the forms, come. I'll walk you through it. I'll coach you through it. I encourage as many people as I can to go ahead and get it. Awesome. I think the more of us that do apply for it, I think it's better for everybody.
I concur.
I agree.
Very good. All right. Cool. Well, that was neat. Trevor, why don't you catch us up to speed a little bit on Ian Thompson, because this definitely applies.
Yeah, it's Sun News has reported this week that Ian Thompson is applying for an ATC because he feels that the police cannot protect him. I don't know if this is if the gun lobby is encouraging him to do this, because this might be our way to start to get it, or if it's just him. But either way, it's going to be followed very closely because Ian Thompson's name is well known due to the media coverage of his case last year. It's almost too bad that it's in the media. I think if he got it quietly, good for him. I think that my opinion is because it's in the media, they may not want to do it because they may not want the country to know that they gave one out.
Yeah.
Because it may set a precedent.
Well, that's true. They may be able to issue it to him quietly without the media, you know, catching wind or whatever. But, I mean, let's be honest here. He probably won't get it.
Yep.
I mean, we live in Canada, unfortunately, and, you know, we just...
Well, maybe he's already been denied, and that's why it made it to the media, but...
Maybe. The article that I read actually said that the police indicated that they would not give him any special treatment, even though he has had subsequent threats on his life.
Yeah,
so his life has been threatened since the court date, or his court win, from what the article I read.
Yeah.
And the police said, yeah, well, okay, good luck.
Yeah, we'll treat you the same as people who haven't been threatened and weren't firebombed.
Yeah. So this is ridiculous. This guy's life, literally his life, is in danger, and you know, he needs an ATC more than anybody. Well, I'm not going to say that, I guess, because we all need ATCs. We don't know when we're going to be accosted or, you know, whatever. But this guy has proof that, you know, he is in danger. He needs this. We all need this. I hope it works. So, anyhow. Yeah, so we have a bunch of emails then that kind of missed the boat on the CCW show. So we're going to go through, because we had Jeff on, we had more CCW talk. We're going to go through some of these and kind of cover them and answer some more questions about ATC. So, Trevor, you want to bring us this first one here?
No, I don't. I'll read the second one.
Are you sure? I really wish you would read this first one.
No, I'm good. I can't be bothered to read gibberish like that. I've had enough time reading regular English.
I know. That's why I wanted you to read it.
Yeah, just move on and go. You go ahead.
Okay. Well, this is this one we actually had special request for, because we mentioned that he had written into the show. And then we had somehow not gotten it into the show notes. It got archived early, accidentally, somehow.
You know, that was me not knowing what this was and thought it was gibberish, so I just tossed it.
Oh, I see. Well, this is from Dirt McGirt. And from those of you who are not on CGN, Canadian Gun Nuts, Dirt McGirt is our resident gangster, I guess you could say. He kind of comes on and posts kind of... gangster stuff, and now it's not really a person, right? It's somebody who's got like a second account, you know, whatever. It's a joke. But anyway, we you know, people noticed that we didn't read it. So here it is from Dirt McGirt. He writes, "Word up, boys. I would definitely carry. Yo, T.O. be a dangerous place, especially around Jane and Finch. What I gotta prepare for, I got a gat, so damn homies ain't be touching me. My piece would def be a Glock 18, so I can mow damn homies down who be messing with my boys. Plus, the Glock be having the safe action trigger, so I won't be smoking my balls off when I carry, you dig? Peace, boys. Dirty."
Fantastic.
Yeah, so Dirt, you know, have fun with your Glock 18. Unfortunately, if that is what you're carrying here in Canada, I think you really are a gangster and you need to be exported quickly. Because, yeah, Glock 18's the full auto Glock, so. Oh. Yep.
Didn't Ken say something like everybody should have the opportunity to, but not everybody should?
You got
That's
it.
That's right. That's right. I would say, Dirt, man. Yeah, pull up your pants, turn your head around front ways, and carry on.
Yeah.
But anyway, there's Dirt McGirt's email. It's in now. You guys can stop emailing me.
So you guys, so if people want more Dirt McGirt, they can look him up on CGN?
CGN, yeah. All CGN's right. A good spot for Dirt McGirt, I think.
All right, cool. This next one comes to us from Grandin. This is my choice for CCW. It would be a SIG P228, of course. It's famously reliable and accurate and compact in size. It has a decocking mechanism instead of a manual safety or a safe trigger, which makes it foolproof for carrying in a holster all day, every day. I'm sure there are people out there that could still mess it up, but who cares about starting with a double action trigger pull when the first shot will most likely be less than 10 meters? A magazine full of 147 grain 9mm is more than enough oomph to dissuade even the most tweaked up meth head muggers. If it's good enough for the SEALs, the P226 variant at least, it's good enough for me. That being said, good thing CCW is not allowed here. The murder rate would spike out of control, just like what we saw with the repeal of the long gun registry, right? Guns are evil, aren't they? keep up the podcasting, boys. It's time well wasted.
Awesome. Thanks, Grandin. Yeah, the 228. It's the kind of the smaller version of the P226. What do you think of that gun, Trev?
I don't like any SIGs. I mean, that being said, I think the SIG makes a great firearm. I think they are quality. They're German made. They're good guns. I personally am not a fan because of the high bore axis, because of the double action, single action, because of the decocker. Carry gun, duty gun, yeah. Certainly not an IPSC gun, but I mean, we always come at it pretty much from that approach. Or if you're going to carry something simple, you know, like the point you made last week about the lady who has a CCW but hasn't started carrying yet.
Yeah.
Revolver or Glock, something with no bells and whistles.
Right. But for an experienced shooter, this SIG is a good gun. There is actually an IPSC shooter in Woodstock who uses a SIG, and he shoots it very well. So, you know, you can shoot them very well. It's just, you know, I'm with Trevor. I'm not a huge fan of SIG myself. I do understand that they are good guns. It's just, they're pretty. I love the look of a SIG. I used to have a Norinco copy of the SIG 228, the NP34.
See,
and I got it because it looked fantastic.
I don't even like the look of them.
No?
Now, with one exception, Jeff Reese out in Calgary, I brought his, I shot his, what's the 40 caliber? 22 what?
I think it's the same number, just a different caliber. I don't know. There's so many different 22
right.
variants, right? So
anyway, it's like a 226, I think, but in 40 cal.
Right.
It's a nice gun. That one was kind of pretty, but
I mean, they're nice guns. They're high quality. If you can shoot it, yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, for sure.
The 228 or the 226, are they a double stack?
Yes, they are.
Yep. See, I tried on a 226 when I was looking for a 9mm, and I've got sick but not long hands, and so that double stack was not fitting my hand very well and getting good trigger action on my finger.
Oh, interesting. So you couldn't get couldn't get your finger wrapped around the trigger very well.
Not as comfortably as I wanted to.
Yeah, I did find that with mine too. It does have the double action did have quite a long trigger pull. The single action was good, but the double action did, it was quite a bit longer. But you know, if you got big hands and you know you're a competent shooter, the SIG series are good guns. So you know, I don't take us not liking them to be anything as an insult. It's just personal opinion. They are good guns. I you know fully acknowledge that.
All right, this next one comes to us from Rob, and Rob says, "Hi, all. On your last show, Matthew and Toby spoke about using bear spray for self-defense. Apparently, our police, again, find it easier that the victim just lay down and die."
Now, this italics here, Trevor, you can read. I just wanted to make it separate so you could tell that it was a news article and not actually
that.
His. I needed to make sure that you knew. Because normally,
this is why the show takes 2 hours. A 24-year-old man faces two charges after he used bear spray to fend off a man who was trying to mug him in the street Thursday, police say. William Charles Cunningham was walking along Bethune Street at 4:30 p.m., when another man allegedly tried to grab him and demanded cash. Cunningham defended himself by spraying the robber in the face, police said. Officers who responded to his call for help discovered he was carrying both bear spray and a large folding pocket knife, police said. Sounds to me like he should have been. Hello. He was carrying these things and needed them. Cunningham is charged with possession of a weapon for a dangerous purpose, defending himself, and unauthorized possession of a weapon. He is to appear in court on September 26th. As always, and this is Rob going on to say, as always, I love the podcast and look forward to listening every week now that I'm caught up. Thanks, Rob. So what about the guy who attempted to do the mugging? Did they not arrest this guy?
I think he got arrested too and charged with something. But what I'm wondering, I don't know, I'm wondering if this Cunningham guy who got charged, you know, after defending himself, if he actually was sort of a shady character himself. It doesn't say it, but I wonder, you know, it could be that he was also like kind of a gangbanger and, you know, it was kind of like, you know, maybe they got into a scuffle and so the police came and they just looked for something to toss him in the slammer too. But, I mean, we don't know that. And I certainly hope that's not the case. And it's ridiculous that this guy needed the tools that he actually used and then got charged with having them for purposes dangerous to the public. I mean, come on.
Well, the bear spray shouldn't have been with him in town.
Well, that's a good point.
If I have my hunting vest, my hunting gear in the back of my car, and my bear spray in the dash, and somebody tries to carjack me and I use the bear spray, well, the bear spray was there because my hunting gear was there.
That makes sense.
Walking down Main Street, why do I have my bear spray? And this is the argument, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering if he maybe was a character of ill repute where he was carrying that with him anyway.
But maybe, he's been, somebody's mugged him in the past.
Maybe he had it, yeah. You know, yeah.
So yeah. Once bitten, twice shy, right? Now he's carrying because he knows he has to walk through a particular dangerous part of town. Obviously carried it because he thought he would need it someday, and he did, and then wrong guy got charged.
Yeah, and the other thing that irritates me is that he got charged for having a folding pocket knife. I carry a folding pocket knife everywhere I go.
Yeah, we all do.
I mean, am I going to get charged with concealed carry because,
play along with me. I'm the cop. Mr. McClatchy, why do you have that folding knife in your pocket, you say?
Because I need to open a box or a letter or cut a piece of string.
And if you had said, I'm carrying it for self-defense, what would I, as the cop, have done?
Well, you'd confiscate and arrest me. But now, here we go. So say I do use it for self-defense, and now they're going to say, well, you're carrying a concealed weapon because clearly you use that as a weapon.
No. If you use it.
Well, they just charged him for having it in a self-defense situation.
No. Maybe they charged him because he told them he was carrying.
Oh, maybe.
You understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah, maybe he did. So, who knows?
So, it's like the folding baton in the dash of my car that's there in case I come across a car accident and I
smash
out
the window. Yep.
Yep.
So. It's all about intent, the reason why you've got it.
Yeah. So.
Anyway, thank you, Rob, for sending that in. Next to us, next comes to us from Alex, and this one's a little bit longer, but it's a good one. He writes, "For those of you about to podcast and show up late, I salute you."
Woohoo!
I'm writing in response to your podcast on concealed carry, as it seems I left my letter open to interpretation. Oh, this was the guy that was talking about how he carried, and we were wondering, did he still carry with one or with nothing, with no round in the chamber? So. This is him. So anyway, he says, first, let me say that it was a great podcast. And to clear things up, I believe Toby described it well. The first 3 to 5 months that I carried concealed, I would carry the pistol without a round in the pipe. But I knew it was something I would need to deal with, so it was a transitional thing for me. One thing that accelerated my transition was the video that I have linked below. For the listeners, the video is a security footage of a jewelry store shooting in India that I found on LiveLeak.com. The scene starts with a gentleman sitting in a chair in the middle of the store facing the entrance. He jumps to his feet, spins around as if he was hit by a bullet, and retreats 3 or 5 feet and draws his pistol. For the next 5 seconds, he fights his slide, trying to rack a round into the chamber. By this time, he is on his knees and was hit by at least 2 more bullets. Then the criminals proceed to disarm the man while still shooting him. So, lessons learned for me. I hope it makes the decision easier for other listeners. If you want to see the video, do a search for jewelry store shooting in Agra. It'll be the only one that pops up. So, yeah, I mean, there's proof right there, you know, or an example right there that you need one in the pipe. If you get shot very quickly or you get wounded or, you know, you just simply don't have two hands free, you can't make your gun do something with no bullet in the in the chamber. You've got to have one in there.
I carry one. I mean, revolver, obviously. It's when I carry my 9, there's one in the pipe.
Yep. Well, there's got to be. I mean, there's absolutely no sense not having one in there. It's not like guns go off by themselves. You still need to pull the trigger for them to go off. I mean, having a round in the chamber is no more dangerous than, you know, having the gun any other way. You still got to pull the trigger.
And if I manage to climb a tree and the bear's still coming, or the cougar, and I'm hanging on with one arm because it's shaking the tree, well, I still got one in the pipe. I'm good to go.
That's right.
Yeah.
Alex continues on here. Secondly, I shoot only Winchester Ranger ammo for self-defense. I have at least 250 of it for the time being, but I have an extra case. I have extra in case I need to provide a sample to law for their investigation. But it was heavily stressed to me in my concealed handgun license class that you want to carry only factory ammunition. When the police send the firearm for testing, they will use factory ammo if you don't have a sample. In most cases, they will have the same factory ammo, but if you use reloads, you're at the mercy of whatever ammo they use. In the case described to us, that meant a guilty verdict.
Can I just jump in there for one sec?
Yeah.
You should keep the box of the that your ammo came in because it has a lot number on it. And if ever they do want to take the gun and test the gun and the ammo, they'll use that lot number to get samples from the factory. The factory will keep, for so many years, samples from every lot. They can't obviously build up all this ammo forever and ever. As it gets older, they do let some of it go, but you know, I forget how far back we were told they do keep it, but they do keep samples from the lots that they make. So keep that box that your factory self-defense ammo comes in, just in case they need that lot number.
Good advice. Yeah, he's saying here about how somebody used hand loads and then they didn't match it. I mean, they didn't have any other samples, so they used factory, and it turned out they gave him a guilty verdict when he wasn't. You know, it was the simple fact that his ammo was different, and so they got different results. So
yeah, there was a case of suicide too, where the husband was charged with murder because they thought that because of how the powder burns were.
Yeah,
and it was homemade ammo, and anyway, he was found not guilty, and it was ruled a suicide, but
it took a while to get there.
Yeah,
huh?
And hand loads were the problem.
Cool. All right. So he finishes off with the hand load information was there just for producing ammo similar to factory for practice. Self-defense ammo is way too expensive for practice, especially on his budget. He says, I hope to attend a Mag 40 sometime. It would be an added bonus if it was in Utah to take in the shenanigans of the gun dudes. Yeah, that would be cool. Very cool. All right. Well, thank you for clearing that up with us, Alex. I was hoping that you didn't carry without one in the pipe, so I'm glad to hear that you do, and I hope that you stay safe down there. So, Trevor, this next one from G. Pierce.
All right. And Mr. Pierce says, I enjoy listening to your show. On episode 21, you read a letter from a listener who had written about the TSA's Federal Flight Deck Officer Program. Following mention of an instance of an FFDO's unintended discharge from his issued sidearm through the fuselage of an aircraft, there was some peanut gallery laughter about finger off the trigger. On the contrary, if you check your facts, you will learn that the trigger in question had been pressed only by the shackle of the TSA-issued padlock, which was affixed per policy on the TSA issue Decentis manufactured but made to TSA specification leather holster. At that time, policy required an FFDO to secure the sidearm in the holster and affix it to the padlock, through the trigger guard onto the holster, and then to stow the assembly in the TSA issue lockbox before opening the cockpit door. Per policy, even bathroom breaks required this disarm process. Since that time, it is my understanding that some of the procedures may have been amended. The FFDO in question did fail to properly clear his pistol's chamber, but as was reported, he did not touch the trigger. Thank you for your attention, and thank you for, it's important that we get called on stuff like that, right?
Sure.
It's easy to armchair quarterback when you don't have all the facts.
Well, yeah. Yep. Yeah, we obviously didn't have time to, well, I guess that's not true. We could have pre-read the email and gone and actually looked up the
facts.
We're
not that kind of show.
We don't do that. No. So no, now we'll seriously. Just cue the peanut gallery laughter about, I didn't clear his gun. Dolt.
No, we won't.
No, you're right. At least he didn't have his finger on the trigger and he wasn't an idiot. You know, he just forgot to clear the chamber or, you know, whatever. I mean, that sounds like a bunch of rigmarole, really.
Oh, my God.
I mean, how hard is it to just go to the bathroom with your pistol on your hip? I mean, come on. Yeah. Cops do it all the time and they don't usually have issues.
I do it too when I'm carrying in the forest.
Yeah. So.
Cool. All right.
Next one comes to us from John. He writes, "Hi, Trevor. I've written to you on CRR in the past, and we met briefly at the CRR charity shoot. I had the Glock 19.
Yes, you did.
Anyway, you mentioned that you were shooting some archery here in the Peel region, and I wanted to pass along a link to my father's website. He's been building bows for many years and has decided to make a full-time business out of custom bow making. Please enjoy these photos, and feel free to share them with your friends and listeners if you think it's something they'd enjoy. I sent these pics off to Andy, and he seemed to like them." So, yeah, Andy's been doing a bit of archery shooting from his Facebook pictures, so that's kind of cool. But, yeah, Trev.
These bows are works of art more than they are a bow, yeah. He's using some different types of exotic woods. It's all laminated together, and he's pumping out some. You're not pumping them out because it's not like a rapid process, but he's handcrafting the most beautiful traditional bows I've seen. So thanks for sending those pictures along. That's pretty much all I'm shooting these days is traditional. I've got two in the house and no compounds left whatsoever. But a handmade traditional bow is you know, you can they're one-offs. They're not two going to be the same. There are companies that mass produce wooden bows. But when you get this kind of a bow, and you know, I want this kind of wood, then this kind of wood, and I want this scroll work done on it maybe, or my initials put in it. I mean, they become individual works of art, and you know, we show up to an archery tournament, or you hang it on the wall. There's not another one like it in the world. That's the kind of stuff this man is making. And so if you could include the link to his website in the show notes, Matthew, that would be fantastic, because any of our listeners that are into traditional archery and really appreciate the fine craftsmanship of wooden bow, they're really going to enjoy these.
Go to our Facebook page, Trevor. We'll post it there.
Awesome.
And then while you're there, like us. But we're not done the show yet. We've still got more email.
So don't go anywhere yet. Or multitask like I'm doing. I'm going to post that on there now while pretending.
Except that you're reading the next email, so.
I thought I just read that one.
No,
oh,
I
yeah,
just
you
read
wrote
that
the
one.
Says Trevor.
Yeah, I read it
oh,
to
okay.
you. Yeah, yeah.
This one is all from right. James, and he says, "Hey, guys, great show with Ken. Can you tell me how you modified your Mossberg to slam fire? I knew that the Ithaca 37, an old Model 12 Winchester, would do it. Love the show." So, and that's James from Texas, West Texas.
Yep. I didn't modify my Mossberg to slam fire. I modified it to auto pump. So slam fire is when you can hold the trigger down and pump it rapidly and it fires every time the pump goes forward. What's happening with the Mossbergs is that if you pull back on the pump before you pull the trigger, and then you pull the trigger, a good majority of shotguns, the pump action will then unlock and you'll cycle the gun just with the pressure of you pulling back on the pump. The Mossbergs don't do that. It locks up and you have to actually release the pressure on the pump before you can pull it back. So it really slows you down if you don't know how to do it right. All I did was set it up so that I can pull back, leave that pressure there, pull the trigger, and the action works, or the action cycles. So that's all I did. If that's what you actually wanted to know how to do, I'll make a video. I'll post it on my YouTube because it's really hard to explain with audio. So I will I'll point you in the right direction there if that's what you want. So, but anyway, thanks for the email. So I guess this last one here comes from Filthy, and he writes, "Hi guys, and or Owen." Well, I guess I could have left that out because Owen's not here. "I thought the crew at Slam Fire Radio would like to hear about my first ever Slam Fire. It was a blast. I had my new AR, which I still blame on Matt, at the range on Sunday to zero the EOTech I had bought for it. I also invited Chris, a member from my range, who helped. Maybe I should just say built my upper for me. Chris is a retired Canadian Forces weapons tech and a heck of a nice guy. All went well until I opened up my ammo box. I only had 20 rounds of 55 grain PMC and 120 rounds of plus or minus 55 grain Norinco ammo. I've had decent results with the Norc ammo and my 16-inch AR, but I didn't think I'd have much luck with it in the new rifle since it has the same 11.5-inch barrel that Matt has on his AR. I think it took 9 rounds at 15 yards to get it a bit less than 1 MOA. Then we set it up for 50 yards. By that time, I ran out of PMC. We had it grouping okay, but we were still fine-tuning the elevation. I decided to try some of the Norc ammo out. I fired 3 shots slowly, then bam, bam, the rifle doubled. Our wives were also at the range with us, and they said the look of shock on my face was pretty amusing. Here's where having a weapons tech as a shooting buddy finally pays off. Chris opened up the AR, checked it all over, and mechanically it's fine. We checked the Norc brass and the primers weren't sticking out, but he thinks it's an ammo issue and it's not like I'm going to disagree, eh? He asked for some of the Norc ammo. He's going to pull the bullets and weigh them and the powder just out of curiosity. We fired 10 more Norc rounds after I checked my underwear, but the groups opened up like we expected, so we moved on to plinking with the 22 conversion kit installed. So Matt, I still don't know how well it's going to shoot at longer ranges, but I can shoot the eye out of an Ewok at 15 yards. Cheers, Filthy.
Toby and Filthy better never meet.
No. They're both Star Wars fans, are they?
Well, Toby is, that's his nickname, the Ewok.
Oh, well then, they better not meet. Filthy will shoot his eye out with a Red Ryder BB gun.
Awesome. Yeah, you didn't catch the last episode of Politics and Guns, did you?
Not yet, no.
It was Toby's 104.
Oh, interesting.
And he brought a friend with him.
Even better.
Blueberry moonshine, and that's all I need to say about that.
All right.
Yeah.
Very good.
I don't think we have any good iTunes reviews this week. There was one I read that was really cool, but I think it was an older one, so I'll have to run it by you and see if we may have already read it on the show. I'm not sure.
Sure, we can toss it in next week.
You know, if they mention me, I like to read them twice. So that's probably right. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Ready for some shout-outs and goodbyes?
Yes, please.
Do you have any shout-outs?
I do not, no.
All right. So I got a couple. One goes to Mark Giroux for being a great roommate at the Provincials and having my back when Muffin attacked. Oh, wait. No, he didn't. He just kind of walked out of the room. And to listener Craig and the other IPSC shooters from Nova Scotia who came out to support our match, thank you very much. So Craig was out again. I saw him down at the Provincials. You know who I'm talking about when I said
listener Craig.
Oh, yes,
definitely. Right? Yep. Yep, yep.
So, yeah, and he cleaned up, too. He picked up – he may have gotten first in Classic. Maybe. Oh, yeah? Yeah, he did. He finished really well in his division. And I think it was Classic. And I think it was first, but I can't remember what I had for supper. So that's not true. It was a 12-inch pizza. And Brian, listener Brian from last week, who wanted to know what scope I have on my 17 HMR. I do care about you enough to tell you and put it in. It's the Bushnell Banner, 36 objective, and it has bullet drop turrets. So you zero it at one distance, let's say 100, and then you just go 150, 175, 200, 2 1/4, something like that. It's a pretty awesome little scope for the money. And then Ross B. Ross B. went to Mag 40, and it's all done, and he's all done, and he passed. And unfortunately, he didn't shoot a 300. I was really hoping that there'd be another 300 shot by a Canadian. But you know what? There was no 300 shot by any students this year.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Rob shot 290, though. Ain't nothing wrong with that. So, Ross, congratulations on going to Mag 40, man. And listen, if you open carried, we want to hear about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever open carry, Trevor?
Just a couple of times, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a couple times in Utah, you know,
right,
where I shot a 300 and Mag 40 with Ross did not, but I wasn't going to, you know, whatever.
Right, yeah, so definitely.
I'm still a student champion, but, you know, whatever, no big deal.
Yeah, no.
And provincial Ipswich champion, but whatever, no big deal.
Right, yeah, no, whatever. No big deal. You'll be fine.
I'm awful. That's it. So let's sign this puppy off for the week.
Well, first of all, thank you, Jeff.
I was just going to say, but before we do, let's thank Jeff. And Jeff, tell everybody again what you have that we don't.
Well, no, I just want to, first of all, thank you guys very much for having me on. It was cool. And, yeah, I have myself a wilderness authorization to carry.
Yeah, shut it.
Which I've been using frequently in the past few weeks.
And I like what you're doing. Keep pushing other people to get it. The more that are given out, the better it's going to be. Whether it's wilderness carry or not. You know, if the more people we get, the more licenses, the more it sends messages to our politicians that we are a gun-toting country. We love our firearms, and we need more rights and freedoms to them. So,
absolutely do.
Speaking of rights and freedoms, listeners, remember, it's very important for you to join one or both of our National Shooting Sports Associations, is Canadian Shooting Sports Association or the NFA, who watch out for big news from the NFA soon. They're taking Ottawa on something. That's all I'm going to say for now, but keep an eye on their website or their Facebook page for more details on that. And be sure to check out the Gun Owners of Canada webpage. It's a very friendly firearms forum for Canadian gun owners. And please, pretty please, you've got to go like us on Facebook. The local library still has 257 likes, and we're only at 186, if that's the new numbers. That's the new number, McClatchy?
I just updated them minutes ago.
So it's not acceptable.
No.
I'm sure there are more than 186 listeners. Now, I know for a fact, because I looked into this, the Edmundston Library only has 257 customers. That, I guarantee it. So they should not be going up. But I know we've got more than 186 listeners. So get out there and like us on Facebook, please. And remember, we're on two networks. This Canadian Reload Radio Network. Check out all the great shows there, except for Canadian Service Conditions Radio. They don't count. And get over to the Crusader Podcast Network and check out all of the great shows over there. Tons of great material. And yeah, tell them we sent you.
Absolutely. Except, again, for the service condition stuff. I mean, that's just...
Oh, that's right. They actually let them on that podcast network.
You know, it's funny. I listened to it when I was out driving the Google car. I had so much free time. I even listened to that show with Brian and Foley. And it's actually really good. For those of you who... Because for me, for a little while, I was like, well, all they're doing is shooting service conditions and talking about a sport that I don't even participate in. I'm not going to enjoy this show very much. But even though I wasn't interested in the sport itself and I haven't participated in it, the show is really good. It doesn't just focus on that. They talk about ARs. They talk about the cool stuff they bought recently. They talk about all kinds of neat stuff. So you actually really should go check out the Canadian Service Conditions podcast, because it is actually really good. I enjoy that show quite a bit.
I still know what a tyro is. I'm trying to figure out.
You learn list. You learn a lot of acronyms. Well, yeah. No, you hear a lot of acronyms.
Yeah. No, the last show was good. They had a good interview, and they had Foley back on, which was nice. And I'm hoping that Foley will bring his Geissele trigger to New Brunswick so I can install it for him or show him how to install it.
In your gun, right?
Exactly. Because, you know, my Stag doesn't have a Geissele yet, right? One's got a JP Industries, the other one has a Geissele.
Yeah.
So look, Brian, or look, Foley, this is how it works. Close the gun up, put it in the safe.
That's right. See ya. Thanks for coming over, Tim. Have a good trip back.
Speaking of thanks for coming over, let's thank the listeners and head on down the road.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us. Jeff, again, thanks for coming on. I guess we'll be back next week. So
be sure to take somebody shooting. Oh, and Toby, I'm Ron freaking Burgundy, not you. Don't be using that on any other shows anymore. Get your own material. I'm Ron Burgundy, and you're not.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Sorry, go ahead.
If I start to yell because I got my headphones on and I'm out of sync with my own voice, just let me know.
Will do. Matthew Zamir, or does he sound better?
It sounds exactly the same. It's you.
I knew you were going to say that. Just you could sound 1,000 times better, but all right. Are we ready?
Exactly the same. Yeah.
Are we ready?
I'm ready. I'm already recording. We're good to go, Trev. Like, seriously, like, why are you holding us up?
Hey, everyone.
Could you not hold us up anymore? Could you kind of start the show anytime now?
Hey, everyone. Hey, everyone, and welcome to Slamfire Radio.
Seriously.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Slamfire Radio episode 23. I'm going to lose it.
All right. I'll let you actually start for real this time, but that is so an outtake.
Okay, we good?